This is Monty in the Morning, the show Phoenix Magazine readers voted number one talk radio show in Arizona.
Number one during your morning commute.
Number one whenever news breaks during your day.
And number one whenever and wherever you want to talk sports.
Now it's time for Monty in the Morning.
Hey, yo, what is up? It is the Monty Show 420, brah!
Are you going to make it over there? Are you okay?
Okay, we'll grow up. Probably not. Smash that subscribe button as we are live on the old YouTube machine. Find us on YouTube, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Appreciate you guys watching the show every day. It makes a huge difference for us when you subscribe and like our videos. You know, we're trying to get to 1,000 subscribers ultimately at the end of the day. We just broke 100. So if you would please subscribe to the show, it really helps the channel grow. If you are listening on the audio version of this podcast, hook it up, man. Get on the YouTube machine. Even if you don't watch on YouTube, just hit subscribe.
Still smash the subscribe button.
The who on
the
your
what?
Find us anywhere you want to find this show, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. A lot to get to today. Holy cow, Joe Biden is president. Sean Hannity hates him. We'll talk about, are you fed up with the political media at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it just, yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah, it's a long, convoluted black hole of trash, basically. The way that he, in my opinion, he embarrassed himself last night. I mean, that's
Hannity
just, yeah, Hannity, I mean, you're okay. Beyond help.
Okay. And so we'll talk about that. I really want to get into this Aaron Rodgers situation in Green Bay because I think this is really a pivotal time for Aaron Rodgers. This NFC Championship game, it's going to be his fifth one, and he's only been to one Super Bowl. I think it really is. It's the LeBron conversation we've had a lot. We're going to talk about that. But I do want to start with Kyrie Irving. If you missed it last night, I don't know how it happened, but the Brooklyn Nets gave up 147 points to a lackluster, young, not ready to win Cleveland Cavalier team. Well, maybe they are, and maybe J.B. Bickerstaff has done something special in Cleveland because they smoke the Nets in double overtime. And, you know, Jake, I think we've talked a lot about this on the show, and that is that there is a significant, I think, bit of evidence that says the Brooklyn Nets are better off if they end up trading Kyrie Irving. Because it was very apparent last night, the guy who suffered from Kyrie Irving's return was James Harden.
Wait, no. Guys who suffered. Multiple guys suffered last night.
Yeah.
Yes, James Harden, Joe Harris, Jeff Green. Multiple people on that team are suffering because Kyrie took, 28 shots last night or whatever it was in his return. And I really think, you know, this isn't a conversation about just like, hey, is Kyrie Irving a good player or is he just sort of like, you know, like, is he a franchise player or that's not the conversation we're having here. The conversation we're simply having here is can Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving play on the same team, make it seamless, make it a championship caliber team? And is it better if Kevin Durant and James Harden simply play together and have great role players like Joe Harris and Jeff Green and, you know, DeAndre Jordan in the middle? Like, is that setup better than a big three? And in my opinion, it is better. I look at what James Harden did last night. What was he like? I think he was like 30-ish and like 12 assists or something like that in a game when he didn't take a shot in the first half, legitimately. No shots for James Harden in the first half because Kyrie was shooting the ball so much and missing. That's why they were behind in this game. And so for me, it is easy to say, hey, like after what we saw with Harden and KD before Kyrie came back, I really like that product. I like what they had going.
A lot.
I thought they had momentum. I thought Joe Harris was shooting the lights out. Like Jeff Green was playing well. And then you bring Kyrie back into the situation, and there was always going to be some rust. There was always going to be some, you know, some things you had to work through with all three of them on the floor. But I didn't think it would be that bad. Like, I thought it would be, hey, you know, the conversation would have been like, hey, like, we need to get Harden a little more looks, or we need to get KD a little more looks. But last night was just straight up, hey, I'm Kyrie. I'm going to shoot the ball a lot, and that's it.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where you have to figure out how it is that, you know, if you are the Nets and you have a guy in James Harden, How is he playing 51 minutes and only scoring 21 points? That's a huge problem. How is Kyrie Irving in his return? And I think it's incumbent on Kyrie, and Jake, I don't know what you think about this, but I think it's incumbent on Kyrie to integrate himself into what had been a pretty smooth, you know, free-flowing team. How is Kyrie Irving playing 48 minutes, taking 28 shots, which is exactly double what Harden took, scoring 37 points, you know, like three assists, two rebounds? Like, Kyrie Irving scored a lot. He shot a lot. But I think the worst thing we saw last night was on that shot where Sexton sent the game in overtime. That was terrible defense by Kyrie.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as Kyrie being, you know, as far as it being on Kyrie to, like, kind of ingratiate himself back into this flow, I can tell you right now, that's not how Kyrie views it. Kyrie views it as, hey, this is my team, and these guys are playing with me. And that's the biggest problem. And so I really struggle with the idea that Kyrie should continue to be on this team. Like, I just think that the setup, you know, dictates that it's Harden and Kevin Durant. And when I look at the classic big threes we've had in the league, like, look at what LeBron and D-Wade were in Miami. They were essentially a big two with Chris Bosh kind of playing, you know, the background guy. You know, they sold it as a big three, but that's essentially what it turned into. And so when I look at that team versus the Nets, I say to myself, well, you essentially have the same thing in you have the same setup in Durant and Harden, you know? And then you throw Kyrie into this mix, and the only difference is Kyrie thinks he's like the Jesus Christ of point guards, and so he's got to constantly have the ball and shoot.
Are you saying he's not the Jesus Christ?
No, I'm saying he's a losing player. That's what I'm saying right now.
Kyrie was God. Like, just ask him. The earth is flat. He knows it because he created it.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, you know, like, I mean, if you listen to what Kyrie says, he's never wrong. He doesn't take blame. And he's a guy, like, he straight up said, I'm not accountable to the media. I'm not going to meet with the media all year. The NBA said, yes, you are. We're going to fine you because every player has a clause in his contract that says you got to meet certain media obligations. So he sits up there and he just, like, literally the other day, he leaned over and had his hands on his chin on his hands and refused to really answer any questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like every guy who's like this is just a pain in the ass.
Yep.
The worst thing that happened to Kyrie Irving was he won a championship in Cleveland.
Yep.
Because since Kyrie became an NBA champion, it has been straight downhill for him. Attitude-wise, desire-wise, fire-wise, play-wise, injury-wise, it's been Boston was an abject failure for Kyrie Irving. So now here's my question. Let's say you do trade Kyrie.
Yeah.
You're probably looking for bench scoring, significant bench scoring in return for him. But you would take draft picks and balance that salary cap out best you can. Are the Brooklyn Nets without Kyrie Irving as good as the Lakers are? I think they're better than the Bucks.
Yeah, they're definitely better than the Bucks.
They're the best team in the East.
Yeah, I to me, the Brooklyn Nets with KD and Harden at full strength, full chemistry level, all of that, having played 30, 40, 50 games together in that setup, yeah, they're gonna be, in my opinion, right there with the Lakers. I think the biggest difference is that when you get into the postseason and you're playing a LeBron James-led team, that team is going to simply adapt to whatever your weaknesses are. So, you know, Harden and KD can play the best basketball possible, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to just simply who makes more plays in any given, you know, in any given series, unfortunately. So I can't say that they'd be better than the Lakers, but I think they'd give them seven games, that's for sure. And I think KD and, well, I guess the question would Harden show up? Because that's really the downfall of James Harden. He hasn't shown up in the postseason.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting question. Like, they had – didn't he was 0 for 28 from 3 at one point, and the Rockets missed 44 straight three-pointers.
And that's how the Warriors beat him.
That's how the Warriors advanced, right? And Kevin Durant comes down and hits that shot, and, like, everybody's hunky-dory, right? And my question is, does that carry over, or – are the Brooklyn Nets just a much better team than any Rocket team that James Harden was part of? Which is what I think, because I'm a guy who believes in James Harden when he's not your number one option.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Russell Westbrook conversation.
Sure.
When you have two number one options, you have no number one options,
mm-hmm.
right? When we saw this first week with the Nets, when it was just James Harden and KD and Joe Harris, everybody understood their role. Everybody understood that Kevin Durant was the number one. Everybody understood that when Durant was off, it was James Harden. And everybody understood you got to do whatever you can do to draw guys and then kick it out to Joe Harris, who is hitting 50% of his three-pointers.
A ridiculous number.
Like you're hitting 50% of your three-pointers, NBA yet you are threes. Still taking the ball out of his hands so that Kyrie Irving can be play-kid.
And then so much to that end that he's forced to come down and rebound because he doesn't have a purpose on the floor. Like, you're talking about one of the best shooters in the league having to be under the basket battling, what was Jared Allen last night, you know, oddly enough. And so, it's just, to me, it's frustrating because we know what this team could be. We know that Point Harden, as they're referring to him as, is really good. Like, when they roll out to start games, James Harden is not looking to score. He's looking to get points on the board with the team.
Yeah.
And when you do that, when you get guys like Kevin Durant going early in the game, when you get Joe Harris knocking down two or three threes in the first quarter, you're setting your team up for success. And James Harden is humbled enough by this trade, and he's so over the moon about being with the Nets and being on a championship-caliber team that he's willing to play point guard, that he's willing to do that. I mean, there have been interviews literally this past week before Kyrie came back where James Harden said, hey, you know, I'm playing point guard on this team, and I haven't had to play that role in a little while, so I got to get better at not turning the damn ball over. And we would win more comfortably if I didn't turn the ball over so much. He straight up said that in a post-game interview.
Yeah.
And so my point here is it speaks to his mindset and where he's at with the game. And so then you bring Kyrie back in the equation, and it's like, oh, well, here we go. We got to restart. We got to figure out, you know, what is Harden going to play the wing, and then Durant's going to play the four or the five, and Kyrie's going to have the ball. It messes the whole thing up.
Yeah, it does. And I think the hard part for me mainly is that this Eastern Conference blows. And when you're watching a team like Brooklyn, and I understand that Steve Nash has not had these three together, and this is not the Nets rotation that we're going to see. It's not. I think things are going to change. I do think they're going to trade Kyrie Irving. There's a lot of buzz around the NBA with that. I do think, and if they don't trade him, they are going to do their level best to trade him.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I not to belabor this point on the Nets at all, but I think Joe Harris is a star. I think Joe Harris is a guy who, he's a three-point champion. He was finally getting his run, and he was cashing on that.
Yeah.
And I know that we've argued over LaMelo Ball starting, not starting.
Sure,
Joe Harris should be starting for the Nets.
Well, and the thing is, the story with Joe Harris is that, you know, this season, this year is going to be his second year straight starting for the Nets. 2 years ago, he was a bench player, and he earned his way into the starting lineup before when Kyrie was in Boston. Joe Harris had earned his way into the starting rotation. So Kyrie comes to the team. Joe Harris is still starting, but now we have this weird dynamic, you know, with the three of them right now. And so you're right. Joe Harris is absolutely the victim in this situation because Kyrie Irving's going to, you know, handle the ball and do all the crazy moves and get to the basket and get his. But it's in a losing effort, and that's my problem with Kyrie Irving. The only reason he's a champion is because he played with LeBron James. LeBron James carried them to the finals. Kyrie hit a big shot, and now he's known as a champion, and that essentially made his career. And so now I look at him as a player, and I agree with you. He's a bit selfish, or quite a bit selfish, really. And he's not a winning mentality. I can say now that James Harden is at least a winning mentality. He's like, hey, my team needs me to play point guard. My team needs me to draw two defenders and kick to Joe Harris. My team needs me to feed KD. I'm going to do these things because I want to win a championship.
Well, I think it's fascinating, and I, for one, will look forward to Kyrie not being on that team. And I know that sounds like I'm a hater, but listen, growing up in Chicago, watching all of the malcontents like Horace Grant and Scottie Pippen, you know, having been there every single day covering the Lakers when Shaq and Kobe were at each other's throat and Kobe was in Sacramento refusing to shoot a basketball during a game. Like, I've seen this movie before. And trust me, the ending never changes. Somebody's got to go. Whether it was Shaq in L.A. or it's going to be Kyrie in Brooklyn, somebody's got to go. And my feeling is they'll be better off when it's Kyrie Irving wearing a different uniform. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Find us on the good old YouTube machine, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. More questions about how long we're going to be on Periscope. Not for long. Like, I feel like, yeah, I mean, we can keep being on Periscope.
Yeah.
Up until March 31st. I don't know. We'll see. We really want a transition to YouTube because that's where we're going to be long term.
Yep.
So what I would encourage you to do is stop watching on Periscope. God love you, Twitter. Jack, please don't block me. and start watching on YouTube because that's going to be our long-term live streaming video home. By the way, you also get highlights of the show. If you miss the show on YouTube, what you can do is subscribe to our playlists that we have there. We have a highlight playlist where we cut up all the different topics of our show. So if you want to just go and listen to it piecemeal, you'll be able to listen to this Kyrie Irving conversation. Right now, you're going to hear us rip Larry Scott, the now soon-to-be former commissioner of the Pac-12, in a monumental move and a shocking news dump on inauguration night.
It's a new day, baby.
It is a new day. It is a new day.
It's a new day.
The funny thing is, everybody made that comparison, Larry Scott to Donald Trump. And I don't think it's that far off.
Yeah.
Because Larry Scott's a guy, what do we know about Larry Scott? He is well-paid.
Right.
Right? He's the highest-paid commissioner in all of college sports.
Yep.
Yet the Pac-12 has the worst media and streaming rights deal in all of professional or college sports.
Yep.
It's abysmal. The Pac-12 network, there's no other way to say it, has been an unequivocal failure. And I think you're seeing that because of the Pac-12 network's failure, you haven't had a team in the Final Four since 2017. Like the Pac-12 in college football, the Pac-12 in college basketball is irrelevant.
Yeah.
I mean, and when have you said that UCLA and Stanford are irrelevant in college basketball?
Yeah.
Right? We had seen USC taking big strides forward. You look at football, how is USC irrelevant on the national college football stage?
Yeah.
How is that possible? Yet they are. And teams like Washington that continue to fight, Oregon continues to fight, yet they come up just that much short. And why? It's things like TV deals that hurt recruiting. It's things like scheduling that Larry Scott is directly in charge of, where you wind up sending, and the best example I can come up with several years ago, USC, a playoff contender in position to go to the college football playoff, then goes to Pullman, Washington on a Friday night in the snow to die.
I'm screwed.
Yeah. Why would you, if you're the Pac-12, why would you send your best brand, a team that I argue on a regular basis in USC, the USC football team is a perennial powerhouse. They always recruit. They always put guys in the NFL. Yet they struggle to get on TV consistently because the Pac-12 TV deal blows. And I'll tell you this right now. Here's why this happened and why the Pac-12 presidents got together over the last month and decided it was time to do this. Because they're going to negotiate a media deal here coming up. And they're not going to allow Larry Scott to do the same thing he did last time.
Yeah.
And with all due respect, because I'll also say I know a ton of people who work at Pac-12 Network. Those are good people that are working hard. But when you don't have a streaming deal, when you don't have a digital platform that's distributed largely, when you don't want to get in bed with YouTube or YouTube TV or, you know, Hulu or Netflix or Amazon or any – look at Amazon. Amazon, whether it's Twitch or the NFL or Premier League Soccer, Amazon is in the sports streaming, the live sporting event streaming business. They wanted to get in bed with Pac-12. Pac-12 wouldn't do it. You've got to get a digital streaming partner that makes sense.
Yeah.
You've got to secure a TV deal. You're looking at the Big Ten and the SEC delivering $50 million a year per school just on their football TV deals. And I'm struggling to understand why the Pac-12 is not on that level.
Yeah, because Larry Scott's an awful leader. He's been an awful leader. And frankly, like, you know, looking back and going off of his actions and the choices that he made, all he was in it for was money. You know, whether it was the trips to Vegas, whether it was, you know, all these different events that they did that, you know, he's got the top penthouse and the top hotel in the city, like, you know, they paid unbelievable rent costs to be in downtown San Francisco when you could have easily been in the Valley paying a third of the cost. Like, so you combine the business side of that with the idea that you don't have a TV deal, and it's no surprise that these teams and these schools, particularly in football, and, you know, obviously basketball applies to this, they're really struggling to recruit or do anything. I mean, how are you supposed to get upper echelon talent when you're competing with the SEC, who's got a major TV deal, who is all about, you know, media and streaming and all that stuff. They got all that, like, that's easy for the SEC. They've got all the brands because they're able to recruit all the top talent. So when you wonder why, you know, Alabama and LSU is on CBS on a national game on a Saturday, well, that's why, because they have a great TV deal. So, yeah, USC should be a national powerhouse. Utah should be a national powerhouse, but they're not. And they hopefully, again, can't say this with all confidence yet because we got to see what they're going to do exactly.
Yep.
But hopefully this means the firing of Larry Scott should mean that now there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It's probably going to take 3-4 years for the Pac-12 to really get to this, like, next level as far as, like, talent and teams. But how great for college football would it be if you had, you know, you'll have the SEC. Hopefully the ACC becomes a little bit more competitive instead of just Clemson's conference. And then you've got the Pac-12 out west that becomes competitive in the national conversation.
Well, and you're looking at a situation where the Pac-12 is going to negotiate media rights beginning in the 2024 season.
Yeah.
So that deal is going to happen here in the next year. Like, if you understand how TV deals work, from 2021 to 2022 – you're going to understand, you know, hey, we have the SEC. We have, you know, like, think about CBS's deal with SEC football that went away. If you think about those kinds of deals, and now you start to say to yourself, okay, well, how do these things work? Well, look at the national TV perspective. The SEC is always going to get the late game window, or it was on CBS.
Yeah.
But think about the way that has worked.
Is that up for negotiation right now?
I think SEC? It didn't. I think the SEC went to ESPN.
Oh, did they?
Okay. Yeah.
But, like, even – okay, so let's just say, you know, and I know you're looking it up, but let's just say the SEC did go to ESPN. Think about the Big Ten.
It did. ESPN and ABC.
Okay, great. So the SEC went to another premier brand in ESPN. Okay, that makes perfect sense.
10-year contract.
10 years worth of exposure on ESPN. What do we always talk about with BYU? They're on ESPN.
$300 million a year to the SEC.
It's insane, dude. Like, it's crazy. But that's the kind of money you need to run successful programs. So the SEC's got ESPN. Where's the Big Ten? They're on Fox, right? Big Ten Saturdays, right? So then where's the Pac-12?
Nowhere.
I don't know.
And this is my point. If you look at where the Pac-12 is right now, they don't have a late game window. They were playing late games on Saturday nights when nobody was watching on the East Coast. You were kicking off. There were games
after dark.
Yeah, they were kicking off games at 8 o'clock Pacific, which is 11 o'clock Eastern.
Yep.
Nobody's watching that game on the East Coast. So, it hurts your opportunity, whether you want to own this or not. It hurts your opportunity to get into the college football playoff because three-quarters of that committee is going to be East Coast. And those guys are not going to watch your games. That was a big problem. So what was the solution there? Okay, well, let's have Pac-12 teams go play crazy road games in conference on Friday nights, late in the 8 o'clock kickoffs on Friday night.
Yeah.
Ridiculous idea. Okay, well, let's have 10. They're talking about 10 a.m. kickoffs Pacific time for Pac-12 games so that they could possibly get on national TV. You're asking an 18-year-old kid to be ready to play a college football game at 10 a.m. That's just not realistic.
No,
in my opinion. You are, and I think that what you said is exactly right. It's going to take a couple of years to find somebody to partner with and give you an attractive primetime window.
Yeah.
Because Fox has got the Big 12,
yeah,
which, by the way, the Big 12 is a much larger brand, in my opinion, than the Pac-12 is.
Yeah, how much is Texas getting on Fox?
Well, but like, Texas is making $45 million a year on their TV deal.
Yeah.
And if you look at the SEC, you know, the SEC just went from a $55 million per year deal with CBS to a $300 million per year deal with ESPN ABC.
And by the way, that tells you how valuable the SEC conference is.
You know, like, it's just, It's incredible. And so what is the advantage that the SEC now has? They can recruit more aggressively. They can spend to recruit more because they can fly more. They can travel more. They can house more.
Is it more attractive to say you're on ESPN than it is on CBS? God.
Because mom can watch the game.
Yeah.
There is no question that if in this day and age when everything's on a cell phone, and Larry Scott never comprehended this, it's on our YouTube channel, by the way. We interviewed Larry Scott.
Yeah.
Larry Scott never comprehended the idea that Pac-12 football and basketball has to be easily and readily available on every parent's cell phone.
Yeah.
Because that's how you get a kid from Tonga to come and play at USC, because his mom on the island can watch the game on her cell phone.
Yep.
That's how you do it. When you're talking about, and I know I get a lot of flack every time I talk about this, but when you talk about inner city black kids that are poor, that don't have cable, that don't have ESPN, but what do they have? Every one of them's got a cell phone.
Yep.
And their mom's got a cell phone. And their dad's got a cell phone. And the kids on the block have cell phones.
And it's $10 to subscribe to ESPN.
They all have cell phones. So where are they going to be able to watch a game? On a cell phone, right? This is not a problem for a guy like, and I'm trying to think, like Porter Gustin here locally. Had a great run with the Browns this year. Should have gone to BYU. Wound up at USC. His parents are never going to want to find his game.
Yeah.
Because they have cable. They have TV. They have laptops. They have internet.
Right.
Think about how many, and this is something I know we take for granted. We shouldn't. How many people in this country don't have access to internet?
Yeah.
It's more than you think, right? How many people, though, have access to cell phones?
Everybody.
Yeah, and I would argue more people have access to cell phones than they do internet when you're poor and you're struggling to pay your mortgage or your rent.
Yeah.
You're going to keep your cell phone on. You're not going to keep your cable on.
Yep.
I mean, it's A plus B equals Larry Scott sucks at being a commissioner in the Pac-12. Right? I mean, that's really what this comes down to.
Yeah.
So when you talk about recruiting, absolutely. When you are getting kids out of Los Angeles, out of, you know the Miami, Florida area.
Right.
When you think, where do the best athletes in the country come from? They come from the South, traditionally the Southeast. Florida puts out speed, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at Illinois, Pennsylvania, Ohio, you get the best linemen out of there, right? Like there are regions per position. I don't know if a lot of people realize that or not. You get everything out of Texas, and you're getting dual threat quarterbacks. A lot of the best quarterbacks are coming out of Southern California right now. Like you have to travel. You have to have reach. When Nick Saban wants to go see a quarterback in L.A., he's going to L.A. to see a quarterback.
Yeah.
He's getting on a private jet. He's staying in a 5-star hotel. And he's going to roll up in a town car in front of that kid's house. That's how you recruit.
Yeah.
There's no question that Alabama is making a ton of money. They're only out recruiting people because of their television reach, their budgets. Like,
and by the way, they win.
But they're only winning because they're out recruiting people.
But it's a vicious cycle.
It is. And that's what people don't understand. It's schools like Washington, which is, with all due respect to the Huskies, Washington's not the most attractive place to go and play.
Uh-huh.
Seattle has weather issues. We all know that. If you look at Pullman, Washington, if you look at Corvallis, Oregon, right, where Oregon State is, these are not the most attractive markets.
Right.
You look at Salt Lake City, Utah. You're getting – why is Utah finally becoming a legitimate program? Because they're recruiting their asses off.
Yeah.
And they're developing guys. And what's more important, they're putting guys in the NFL.
Yeah.
What if every Utah game was on national TV?
Be a different conversation.
What if every Utah game – you didn't have to go searching through the Pac-12 network to figure out where it is, and is it on DirecTV?
I don't even get Pac-12 network, bro. That's the problem.
That's the issue. You don't have TV reach, and you don't have a mobile platform that's going to deliver those games to parents in two households.
Yeah.
What if Kyle Whittingham had that full array of reach? What if Kyle Whittingham, and I know this is going to be a ball buster for Ute fans, what if Kyle Whittingham had the same reach that Kalani Sitake did? Because we all know BYU has a great deal with ESPN. ESPN wants to re-sign BYU. BYU wants to re-sign with ESPN. BYU has their own in-house TV network, BYU TV, right? So Anybody that goes to BYU, I'm telling you now, how do I listen to BYU games on the radio? Sirius XM.
Yep.
I listen to BYU radio on Sirius XM. Locally, they have a huge radio contract, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are Jamal Williams' mom in Los Angeles and you're not coming to the game, you need to know that you can watch your son play football. He's on ESPN, no problem.
Easy peasy.
It's not hard to figure this out, man.
It's not rocket science.
It's why BYU continues to have reach. That's why they're able to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, anyway, my point is Larry Scott's a terrible commissioner. And this is finally the time where you have a situation where you can get yourself in just a position to compete.
Yeah. I mean, you're just trying to get into the meeting right now. You're not even sitting down at the table.
Yeah.
I
mean, that's really all this is. Yeah. You're just trying to get in the room.
But hey, we've been talking about this for what, 5 years now? Right? I mean,
a long time.
You referenced that interview we have on the channel with Larry Scott. And in that interview, he talks about how he's going to do a media deal and a TV deal. And then it never happened.
Never happened.
And so I don't remember the year that was. I think that was like 18, maybe, or 17, maybe, somewhere
in Los Angeles at Pac-12 Media Days.
Yeah. And so, you know, I just think about how long he's been commissioner. And you think about the compounding effect of like year over year over year over year of you not having a deal, of the schools not being able to recruit.
Jake, you'll never recover from that.
Yeah.
You'll never recoup that lost money.
It's kind of like what we said with the whole Kyrie thing. They're just starting over now. Now you got to find your new path. Now you got to find, okay, who's going to be our commissioner? How are we going to do this? You know, like we have to pave the way here. And that's tough.
At some point, you just got to start walking forward. And at some point, you're going to subscribe to us on YouTube because we're going to beat you over the head with it. Make sure you search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show on YouTube. To find the show, we're live every morning right around 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific. You can always catch the replays. And as I said, to start the show, if you're just tuning in, because I see a lot of people joining us late, if you're just tuning in, all of our highlights are in the playlist. You can look at the Monty Show highlights in our playlist. All of it is live every day on YouTube. Just search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Speaking of make or break, Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers are going to host the NFC Championship game this weekend. Yes, it's Tom Brady. Yes, it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yes, Tom Brady is still a legend. He's going for 7. Yes, that defense is fast, physical, and quick for the Tampa Bay Bucs. But this game's about Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. And I say that because this will be not 1 or 2 or 3 or 4. This will be 5 NFC Championship games for Aaron Rodgers, and he's only been to 1 Super Bowl. Last year, the story was, hey, we're in the NFC Championship game. Let's go to San Francisco, get that ass whooped, and then come home and blame it on the fact we were on the road. Aaron Rodgers said, I want this game at home. Well, guess what? We got this game at home. What happens if you lose this game? I would argue that this is very similar to LeBron James. I've been to 800 NBA finals, and I've only won 3. That's a problem. So my point is, I think this is make or break, Jake. I think this is a legacy-defining moment for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I would agree. There's no excuses. You know, this Bucs team is 100% capable. They're totally good enough. They're a worthy opponent. So, you know, I think if you're Aaron Rodgers, like, there's a lot on the line here. And if you think Tom Brady's not, you know, if you think Tom Brady's coming to this game saying, hey, I got 6, so 7 doesn't really matter, you're mistaken. Tom Brady's coming for you. And I think for Aaron Rodgers and this Packers team, and really for Matt LaFleur, like this is a career defining game on so many levels. And I think for Aaron Rodgers, the trouble is yeah, he's a Hall of Famer, but again, he's not trying to get in the Hall of Fame. He's trying to be in the GOAT conversation. And I think a lot of Packer fans would tell you he's in the GOAT conversation. But to be in the GOAT conversation, you got to have more than one, man. You got to like be a consistent winner. You got to get there constantly. And so I look at the division he plays in, being that it's a weak division and that you only ever have to kind of go up against the Bears, the Lions, and the Vikings are basically pushovers every single year. You know, you're basically in the same position that Brady was. You know, that AFC East is not difficult. That's why they won like 15 years in a row. So you've got a weak division. You've been to the postseason. The only difference is you haven't won the way Brady's won, you know, or the way others have won. And so, yeah, you're right. It's a career-defining game. I think, you know, it's going to be a difficult pick. I think, you know, right now.
I don't think it is.
Right now, I think you have to go with the Packers, but just because it's at home. But then I start to think about, well, Brady knows how to play in the cold. This team runs the football really well. I mean, there's a lot in this game.
I'm saying that I feel like, you know, just kind of looking at some of these matchups, I feel like this is going to be a really close game.
Yeah.
And we'll obviously pick these games tomorrow. Here on the show, we do it every Friday during the NFL season. I mean, Green Bay is favored by 3. That tells you that the boys in Vegas don't love the Packers in this game because home teams get 3 points in Vegas. And so you're in a situation where if the only thing separating you from being an underdog are the 3 points that Vegas already gives you,
yeah,
that tells me that Vegas doesn't love the Green Bay Packers.
Well, and they don't believe in the Packers.
Well, and that validates kind of how I feel. You know, I love the weapons, but those weapons, you know, are going to be hard-pressed against a much faster defense than they've seen. So the physicality of the linebackers in Tampa, I think Tom Brady's ability to execute. I'll be interested to see the physical ability of Mike Evans in this game. It's going to be freezing cold. He's got a lot of injuries that are bothering him, back, ribs, legs, arms, face.
You know.
I think he's day-to-day with injured hair. Like, Mike Evans is a guy that they really need. But when you are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you're dead even on the line with the Packers. The number's 51.
51, dude.
That tells you that Vegas feels like this is going to be a pretty tight game. I don't see why you wouldn't pick the Bucs. I mean, it's even hard for me to spit it out. Like, this is Lambeau Field. But
no fans and minimal fans.
There'll be more fans than there has been. It was loud last weekend. But there's something different about Aaron Rodgers right now that it feels like he gets into these games and he grips the football. You know, it feels like you're looking at a matchup here where, man, I really wonder how well he's going to be able to perform. Because it's not going to be a game where you're going to have a fast surface, right? Like, you look at the Bucs going to Tampa last weekend or the Bucs going to New Orleans last weekend and ending Drew Brees' career, right? They melded their style to fit that game.
Yeah.
And Tom Brady threw the ball down the field, you know, but he was only 18 of 33 for 200 yards. But he doesn't turn the football over. And how did they wind up winning that game? They ran for 127 yards.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, when you talk about them molding their game, they're gonna run the hell out of football in this game. Like, they're going to I would guess that they would use Rojo and Fournette to really, you know, establish the run game. And then once you have that run game, being that Tom Brady's your quarterback, I mean, the world's your oyster, man. I mean, there's not, you know, you could be playing the number one defense in the league and they're not going to be able to do anything about it if you're able to run the football, you know?
Listen, if I'd have told you that Mike Evans and Antonio Brown would combine for 2 catches and 13 yards in a playoff game against the Saints.
And you won comfortably.
You would have said that was a loss. Thank you for selling the lead. That you'd have said that was a loss, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that Tom Brady does what Tom Brady's always done. Whether it's Chris Hogan or now Cameron Brait, he makes guys better. Cameron Brait getting 4 catches for 50 yards. Leonard Fournette, 5 catches for 44 yards. Chris Godwin, 4 catches, a very shaky 4 catches, by the way, for 34 yards. Like, throwing touchdowns to Leonard Fournette, like, he's using every guy to the maximum of their capabilities. And that's what makes Tom Brady a 6-time Super Bowl champion. It's why guys like LeGarrette Blount are able to go to New England and succeed.
Mm-hmm.
It's why guys like Randy Moss can go to New England and succeed because, oh, this is the guy that go catches fly balls? Let me go throw him a fly ball, right? When you look at guys like Troy Brown or think of any of the guys that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have just thrown out there on offense and turned into something stellar, what happens when they leave? Look at Hogan. Hogan hasn't had a career since he left Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know, like, so there's all of these reasons to believe that the Bucs, and by the way, they can play different styles of football. That's why I wonder, who are the Green Bay Packers? Like, are the Packers going to be able to come out and play, live and die underneath? Because they do well when they throw the ball down the field. They do well when they have these incredible big plays down the field. That's when the Packers break your spirit. It's not the underneath stuff. Mm. It's not the 5 yard out to Davante Adams. It's when Davante Adams runs that cross pattern and just catches a football and runs right up the seam.
Yeah.
It's when you find guys that, you know, you just can't account for everybody, right? And it's like looking at their numbers last week, you know, it's Alan Lazard's touchdown catch that
right.
just absolutely rips your balls off and stomps on them on the cold, frozen tundra of Lambeau Field.
Uh-huh.
That's the play where you're like, we're not winning this game.
Mm-hmm.
It's over. We're not winning this game. And they tend to come up with that play on a regular basis. And
yeah.
I think that's the thing. When you start looking at this Tampa defense, that's the thing that I think this Tampa defense is capable of stopping. Now, the good news is that, what is this? This is a 2 o'clock kickoff in Green Bay or something like that.
Mm.
And you start looking at, you know, weather forecasts and, I'll be interested to get a little closer to the game and see where the weather actually will wind up. But this is going to be a really interesting game. I want to see Aaron Rodgers do it. I want to see Aaron Rodgers show up in a situation where he has to be the guy that carries this team through a big adverse situation in an NFC championship game with a Super Bowl bid on the line. And let's see if he doesn't squeeze all the air out of the football. Because this guy's a spectacular talent at quarterback.
Right. Yeah.
The only question is he a championship caliber quarterback?
Nah.
And is he Brett Favre that always threw the interception at the wrong time? Or is he the guy in Aaron Rodgers who's now finally playing back to his potential that's going to actually make a difference when he throws a football? I think it's a fascinating question. You know it's going to be cold. The forecast is 32 degrees with light snow flurries.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Tom Brady cares.
No.
I don't think Rob Gronkowski or Rojo.
No,
or
I don't, care.
I don't yeah. think any of those guys. Leonard Fournette is a guy that's played in bad weather. I don't think they care.
Nope.
I really don't. It'll be interesting to watch. Obviously, Antonio Brown's a guy that played in a lot of cold weather in Pittsburgh. They have a lot of guys who are used to playing in crappy weather.
Dude, they're built to win the game. Let's be honest.
They are. But will they? That's a huge question. Will they win this game? I'll look forward to having this conversation tomorrow because I honestly don't know. I'll look at it tonight. I honestly don't know which way I'm going to go with this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm clearly leaning Bucks.
Yeah.
But Aaron Rodgers is playing really good football right now.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to it's an extremely difficult game to pick. I think, you know, in these games, there's always turnovers in these games that cause chaos. There's always extra possessions. You know, there's always things that happen. So, you know, yeah, I'll probably wind up going Bucks, but yeah, it's going to be chaos for sure.
William says, glad to see you're feeling better, Jake. What did he say? Are the drop machines broken?
No.
Well, there's only one drop machine.
No, there's not. It's not broken. I just haven't had an opportunity to use it yet. There hasn't been a good.
Well, you have had opportunities. Like, I'm sitting here thinking of drops in my head as you're not playing them. But hey, I mean, not all of us can be perfect
yeah.
in life like me
yeah.
or good looking.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the thing that I know is to hit the subscribe button on YouTube. Just search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, and hit the subscribe button. Should we talk about Joe Biden's inauguration?
Yeah, it's kind of an important event in our history. But,
A little bit. Yesterday was kind of an interesting day. And I say that because it was almost surreal watching Donald Trump walk out of the White House, get on that helicopter, and fly away to oblivion. He went from the president of the United States to a Florida man in like an hour and a half. It was interesting to watch. First of all, where are you? And I know that we all are, or we all tend to be, critics of Donald Trump. I totally get that. But put that aside for a minute and ask yourself, where is that guy today? Well, he's at Mar-a-Lago in Florida. What do you mean?
Yeah,
he's
watching Fox News in Mar-a-Lago in his mansion that the IRS is going to take. and he's probably got about 6 months till he's in prison.
It's a condo community that isn't allowed to have full-time residents, so of course he doesn't have a mansion there. They, see, the drop machine works. William, you're welcome. But where is he mentally today? I think if I had to guess, Donald Trump is miserable. I think last night, one of the things that was so interesting is I sat on the couch with Mrs. Monty, and she was giddy and gleeful. She has no love lost for Donald Trump whatsoever. She was giddy and gleeful watching the inauguration.
Right.
And the parade across America and the concerts and the poetry and Anderson Cooper talking to the, you know, Ms. Godwin, the poet. And
which she did an amazing job on.
She did. But there was a palatable release of negativity in this country yesterday. And I don't know if that is, you know, doom and gloom lifting. I don't know if that's strictly the fact that Donald Trump isn't the president of the United States anymore. That we have a black woman as the vice president of the United States. That we have a person in Joe Biden who stood up on a stage yesterday and told over 1,000 new White House employees, if I see you disrespect one of your coworkers, I'll fire you. When we've come out of 4 years of all the president of the United States has done is disrespect and fire his coworkers.
Yep.
Because it's never his fault. I think there, I felt like yesterday was almost a bloodletting of sorts. And I know that there are at least 74 million people in this country of what, 400 million?
Yeah.
There are 74 million people in this country who are hurting today, who are not happy that Joe Biden's president. I totally get that. But I don't think there's any way to doubt whether it was, you know, Macron in France, leaders across the world breathing a huge sigh of relief yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Because the U.S. rejoined the World Health Organization. And, you know, I can't remember who said it. It may have been Merkel. I can't remember who said it. The lies have finally stopped.
Yeah.
We can get on with fighting coronavirus full force now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing that really stands out to me, Jake, is with all of this relief and this sense of doom and gloom lifting,
mm-hmm.
it tells you that the United States of America is still a force globally. And it is still looked at as the difference maker in wars, in pandemics, in time of need. Mm-hmm. The United States still has a place internationally.
Yeah, I think it's just so clear that Donald Trump was the issue, not the country itself. And I think Donald Trump is somebody who was never really fit to be a president, but basically ran on the whole idea that, you know, he was going to make America great again and he was going to do all these great things. And it's just all fake. It's all lies. And that's really the tough part with politics, especially in our country. Our one of our biggest issues as a country, in my opinion, is that our people are so gullible, they'll believe anything, you know. And so, you know, now we're at a point where we're seeing people crying on Twitter because Donald Trump, you know, is not in office anymore, which is just ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Like, yeah, I agree. There was a sense of like a new beginning, a sense of like, hey, we're back. Like things are better now, you know, and I hope that Joe Biden is able to get us past the pandemic, you know, quickly and quickly being the next, I would hope, 6 months.
But what about Sean Hannity last night? Because we all know that Sean Hannity is the source of truth and justice for all in this country. Sorry, I threw up in my mouth a little bit after I said that.
Right.
We all know that Sean Hannity is a Trump apologist.
Mm.
So Sean Hannity last night ripped Joe Biden because he called him senile and he said he was old and frail. And Sean Hannity spent a good portion of his program last night ripping Joe Biden because there's 400,000 people dead, Joe. Let's get to work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait.
Predictably,
oh, go ahead.
Meandered his way through what is a truly unremarkable, totally forgettable, even pre-rehearsed set of remarks. Let's be honest. The rest of the media mob, they were just flat out lying to the American people as per usual. This was not in any way, shape, manner, or form a memorable speech. It will not be talked about decades to come. Frankly, to be blunt, it's already forgotten. Even Bill Clinton seemed to be falling. Yeah, it looks like he's nodding off there. Take a look. asleep. Poor Bernie Sanders, he looked miserable and completely uninterested. I don't know, looks like he thought he was in Vermont. As I said on the radio this afternoon, the inaugural address sounded more like an uninspired student council, well, high school student council president acceptance speech from a guy who desperately was craving a nap. And of course, the main theme of the speech, it was unity. After 4 years of outright lying, conspiracy theories, witch hunts, one hoax after another, vitriol, nonstop hysteria, two impeachments, including one that is still unconstitutionally ongoing, Biden's hollow calls for unity are both laughable and completely disingenuous. Total and complete BS. Well, cheap, basically bumper stickers and old, worn out liberal socialist cliche.
Like, what are we doing? What are we, seriously, what are we doing here? Like, when you're saying that Joe Biden was desperate for a nap yesterday, the guy was up at 5 a.m. He didn't go to bed until well after 1 a.m. Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get it. Joe Biden's old. He's 78. It's funny to rip old people, I guess, if you're Sean Hannity. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
We're really going to criticize Joe Biden for rehearsing his inauguration speech. So you're telling me he should just walk up there and free flow off the top of his head like Donald Trump had done for the last 4 years?
Like he did yesterday.
Yeah, like in completely wrecked himself multiple times? No. When you're a professional, which Sean Hannity is not, but when you're a professional and you speak for a living, you rehearse. You know what you're going to say before you say it. Because when you don't know what you're going to say before you say it, bad things happen.
All right, so here's a snippet of Donald Trump's speech at the airbase yesterday. Just listen. He's free-flowing. There's no teleprompters here. Just free-flow Donald Trump.
I will always fight for you. I will be watching. I will be listening. And I will tell you that the future of this country has never been better. I wish the new administration great luck and great success. I think they'll have great success. They have the foundation to do something really spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we put it in a position like it's never been before, despite...
Okay, wait. You put it in a position like it's never been before? There is no... One of the things that came out yesterday, there's no plan in the federal government for distributing the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
None. Zero. There was no... Like, he talked about this, what do they call it, warp speed?
Yeah, Operation Warp Speed.
There was no warp speed.
Yeah.
There never was a name. There never was a plan.
Right.
They don't have a plan for rolling it out. He talks about how he left it in good shape. Donald Trump did something where he embedded his employees in intelligence and justice 3 days before he left office. He appointed by direction a dozen employees. And now it came out yesterday because they suspended several of them. It came out that the only reason he put these people in these places is because they don't want the transcript or the recording of his call with the Ukrainian president released.
Mm-hmm.
And two of these assets that Donald Trump had put in the Justice Department were flagged for accessing the Ukrainian files, the file on the Ukrainian investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they got caught, because they were trying to, you know, essentially hide those files.
Right.
So when you say, oh, we left him in a place where they've... Come on. Guy, are you kidding me? We're 3 million jobs down.
Yeah.
From the day... How many people realize this? We talk about the economy and we talk about, you know, Donald Trump's success on the economy. And do you realize that we are 3 million jobs less? 3 million jobs less today than the day that Donald Trump took office. And if we're really being honest, look at what was left for the last two Democratic occupants of the White House. W, and it was, you know, to a large extent, 2008 was not W's fault. Mm-hmm. I think the wars, obviously, you could talk about. The housing bubble was not George Bush's fault.
Right.
But what did Barack Obama walk into? The worst stock market crash we've ever seen. One of the worst economies we've ever seen. Certainly, up until now, one of the worst depressions we'd ever seen.
Right.
Now you have Joe Biden coming in the middle of a pandemic where the previous administration absolutely positively did nothing to stem the tide of the spread of the coronavirus in this country, to the point where most staffers in the White House got coronavirus, and it was such a project, they had to wait because the Trump administration and staff would not leave 2 days early so that they could disinfect the White House.
Right.
They wouldn't leave until they had to leave the day before the inauguration. So they had to spend millions of extra dollars just to get people in place to disinfect, if you will, the White House.
Yeah.
Because they all had coronavirus and none of them would wear masks.
Right.
So what's the first thing that Joe Biden did? He put in a mask mandate on all federal property. You must wear a mask and you must socially distance.
Yeah.
Like, this is not rocket science.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have Donnie sitting up there talking about how no administration's ever been left so good in such a good position. It continues this Sean Hannity, Donald Trump pattern of just straight lying.
Yeah.
There is no proof. Sean Hannity last night blamed Joe Biden for coronavirus.
Mm.
Joe Biden wasn't the president. He immediately took action related to the spread of coronavirus.
Right.
Today, he has said day two is all about coronavirus. He's already got the fact that the Congress and the Senate have not confirmed any of his cabinet picks before he took office. And by the way, they confirmed one yesterday, his national director of intelligence, right? He has no confirmations. But now, hopefully, when he has a 50-50 control of the Senate, he's got control of the House just narrowly. Hopefully, he's able to get these confirmations done in a quick order so that he can staff up. Donald Trump made it impossible for him to staff up ahead of time.
Right. Yeah.
Right? But Sean Hannity is going to lie about that.
Right.
Sean Hannity is continuing to spout off about the great steal and the fraud. And come on. Like, at what point do we stop saying that it was a Russian hoax?
Mm.
At what point do we stop lying and covering for Donald Trump?
Yeah.
When does that happen?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of weird because Fox News had kind of come around a little bit, you know, and they had stopped doing this stuff. And then now Hannity's back to it. So I don't know.
I think at some point, and the ratings certainly have flipped. Fox News has dominated the cable news ratings for years now. All of a sudden, that completely flipped. And when you started looking at election night coverage, all of that coverage was won by CNN.
Yeah.
You look at the insurrection 2 weeks ago, all of that coverage was in a landslide, was won by CNN. You look at the inaugural, my guess is, and mainly because Fox News didn't cover a good part of it.
Yeah.
Sean Hannity standing up there talking about how the speech was boring and insignificant.
Yeah.
There was nothing special about it. Yet the rest of the country and the rest of the media, including your conservative friends on Fox News, said it was exactly what the country needed.
And here's a snippet right here.
Every disagreement doesn't have to be a cause for total war. And we must reject the culture in which facts themselves are manipulated and even manufactured. In another January, on New Year's Day in 1863, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. When he put pen to paper, the president said, and I quote, "If my name ever goes down into history, it'll be for this act, and my whole soul is in it." My whole soul is in it. Today, on this January day, my whole soul is in this, bringing America together, uniting our people, uniting our nation. And I ask every American to join me in this cause. We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal. We can do this if we open our souls instead of hardening our hearts, if we show a little tolerance and humility.
Yeah. I just don't understand how you can say that that's not exactly the speech that we needed in this country.
Yeah.
When you're talking about the fact, his line about how not every argument needs to lead to war.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what this country is, that we need to end this civil war that we have. Exactly right. Stever was messaging with me last night. Headband Stever, as he is latched onto. He was telling me, essentially, you know, and he gave me permission, not that I ever get to message him back, of course, but he essentially said, you can say, because I always say on the show, I don't know what I can read of yours and not, because Stever is a special forces guy, but he essentially said, back home in Arizona, because we had nothing to do. And the good news is, they had nothing to do on Inauguration Day.
Yeah.
Because there was no rioting. Outside of Portland, Oregon, there was really no rioting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it, we're at a point in this country where we've got to stop this nonsense with these civil wars. And we've got to stop this nonsense. Like, you know, there's all of this concern now about these congressmen who were giving tours, or they had their staff give tours, allegedly, the day before the insurrection. On January 5th, they were giving tours. The insurrection was January 6th.
Right.
And what is so crazy is that you had one of these new Congress people tweeting out that Nancy Pelosi has been evacuated from the House chamber. Well, it turns out that she is a QAnon supporter, and she was at the rally. She was at the riot that got out of control, and she's tweeting about locations. And there's allegations that her staff was touring people around the Capitol. Yeah. And I'm intentionally not saying this woman's name, because it hasn't been proven that her, you know, like, there have been no charges. They're looking at video and of guest logs, and they're trying to connect the dots. But when you're at the rally and you are tweeting out information saying, hey, Nancy Pelosi's been moved, why would you be tweeting that out?
Yeah.
Other than to say, hey, by the way, everybody who's in there, because we now know that they use Telegram, and they used, I can never remember the name of that social media, that concern.
Parler,
and they use Twitter to communicate. And there she is on Twitter, Nancy Pelosi's been moved.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did they, because I don't know how many people have ever been to the Capitol, how many people have actually been to Congress. It is not like you walk in and turn. There's not a sign that says turn left to get to the House and turn right to go to the Senate.
Hey, and Nancy Pelosi's desk is right down there.
Yeah, like, it's hard to get around the Capitol. Like, it is a confusing building by design.
Yeah.
And it worked to perfection, right? Thank God that cop misled those rioters, because they'd have had the
amazing
vice president.
Amazing act of service.
They'd have had the vice president. But you start to understand when those people knew exactly how to get to Speaker Pelosi's office and right down to the Senate floor, this was not an accident.
No. Nope.
This was
it
not
was planned,
accident.
It was executed, and they just failed.
Do you feel better about our country today?
Yeah, I mean, I feel better globally, sure, that, you know, that we have a more reasonable leader in place. I'm not going to sit here and be the guy who evangelizes for Joe Biden. I think he's the guy that we need right now, but I don't think he's certainly the best candidate that the Democrats can put out. And I hope that this isn't a whole deal where it's just like, oh, well, Kamala, you know, is the vice president.
It's Kamala Harris, please.
Kamala is the vice president.
I heard again yesterday that it is racially insensitive to call her Kamala.
Kamala Harris is the vice president of the United States.
But that's where we are in this country.
It's ridiculous. It's a name. People say names differently depending on who you ask.
Well, and it's
not a racial attack to mispronounce someone's name.
The conservative wing of our government during the election process intentionally mispronounced her name.
Right.
And did so as an insult. But anyway, here, no, there. The proof is in the pudding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Today's a big day.
Yeah.
The announcements, I mean, putting, you know, Dr. Fauci in charge of the pandemic in this country and making him the liaison to the World Health Organization. Well, now it's time to put up or shut up, because we are long past the point of, hey, how are we going to fix this? We need vaccines in hundreds of millions of Americans' arms.
Yeah.
Joe Biden has said that he would like to do 100 million vaccines in the first 100 days. Well, it's time to live up to that.
Yeah.
And we need to figure out how to do that.
Yeah. And I the difference is I trust that he'll be able to do it. I don't trust that Donald Trump would have been able to do it. You know, I think the biggest difference is like, you know, Joe Biden, you know, is competent. Like, that's the thing. Like, I can honestly say that I believe Joe Biden is competent enough. I don't know if 100 million in the first 100 days is realistic. I would guess it is, because Joe Biden's not the guy who just says stuff just to say things. You know, his brand has been all about, hey, you know, we're going off science and numbers, you know? So he wouldn't just, I highly doubt he'd just throw out the $100 million number if they couldn't
well,
do it.
Well, and one of the things he's already done is he's already said he's going to use the Defense Production Act.
Yeah.
He is going to force companies to produce, you know, PPE that's going to protect our healthcare workers. He has already talked about frontline workers and including teachers getting vaccinations first, as mm-hmm. they should. He has talked about the fact that he wants kids back in school in the first 100 days so the parents can go back to work and the economy can get back moving.
Yeah.
But the only way to do that is to make sure that the vaccine is rolled out and that PPE is available to teachers and frontline workers. And he has mandated that you know, there is a certain level of mask that needs to be worn. Like, he's doing all these things, but he has a plan. They didn't. And this is something that I think the Trump administration never was able to get their hands around. You can't just say we're going to use the Defense Production Act and not know how to use it and not know the net effect of using it.
Right.
Joe Biden's already been through this. He has the experience.
Yes.
When he says we're going to use the Defense Production Act to create more and make sure we deliver the right kind of PPE, he's going to do that.
Yeah, and I think his time as vice president with Obama is going to prove extremely valuable. And that's why I say, like, he's competent. He knows what he's doing. He knows, like, again, and this is the biggest difference. And it's not about whether you agree with his politics or not. The point just is he has a plan, and he's going to do everything that he can do to execute it, where Donald Trump didn't even have a plan.
You got to get that vaccine into people. You've got to get it into our arms. It has to happen.
Yep.
And he's already talking about, you know, trying to service everybody who's 55 and older within the first 100 days, which would be a huge step forward.
Yeah.
Making sure that 55 and older, frontline workers, law enforcement, teachers, medical workers, that they all get it, that they all get the equipment they need. Like, now it's time to act and produce. Because mm-hmm. if Joe Biden doesn't produce, the Democrats are going to lose the midterms.
Right.
And he has got both houses of Congress. I mean, the Democrats have the White House and both houses of Congress. It's time to leverage that.
Yeah, you got to do it.
You know? Yeah. And I also think that Donald Trump, again, damaged the Republicans because he has shown that you can do things through executive order. Now, it's certain things, and he lost a lot of ability in a lot of court fights over it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the other thing, and I know we got to go, but the other thing that I think is really frustrating to me is in Arizona, our mountains on the southern border are to be treasured. And yesterday, and really what is just an act of defiance by the contractors because they want to get paid,
mm.
they continued blowing up mountains because they're building the wall on these mountains on the southern border in Arizona. And so yesterday, it was incredibly disappointing to see that our free ranges were being destroyed by dynamite and demolition crews. Because they wanted to get paid, knowing damn well that they were not going to ever put a wall where they were blowing that up.
Right.
And you're just destroying mountains and habitats, and it's really frustrating. The whole thing is really frustrating. So, because, by the way, Joe Biden signed an executive order ending funding and ending the construction process for the wall, but that's going to take, I think it goes into effect 30 days.
Yeah.
You have to give a notice.
So there's time.
So there's time for them to spend, you know, to work so they get paid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's incredibly frustrating.
Politics.
So. Yeah, it is what it is. And you need to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. Like and subscribe to our channel on YouTube. Guess what it is? I know you're shocked. It's The Monty Show. MONTY, anywhere you get a podcast, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. And of course, you can find Jake, SLC Supercars, on Twitter and Instagram. Until tomorrow, say good luck, Joe.
Good luck, Joe.